papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people.
So we're going to do a radio show here, and we'll talk about the media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, here with my colleagues to talk about what's going on in our newsrooms and how ethical decisions are being made in journalism. I'm the former editor of the Times Union, now doing the Upstate American. Would you all like to explain who you are and why you're here?
Hey, I'm Judy Patrick. I worked in daily newspapers for decades, and you know what? There's a crisis in journalism, and I'm here to fight for journalism, the free press. We're under attack. Man, we got to stand up.
And I'm Miles Reed. I'm editor at the Daily Gazette. I've been doing this since I got out of college, and I wouldn't do anything differently, but boy, is it under attack. It's harder every day, but I think overall, the newspaper industry, the media industry has acquitted itself pretty well, despite some huge challenges, but I feel confident.
Ian Pickus here. I am the news director at WAMC, our home station for this broadcast, and I'm here, I think, because other people canceled.
No, that's not true. Our host. All right, so we've got two people still in the trenches, and Judy and I are kind of doing our stuff on the sidelines here in a different way. We're just not getting paid as much for the work that we're doing, right?
Certainly.
People say, what's retirement like? I said, I don't know. I just don't get a paycheck.
It's a noble cause we're after.
It's a noble cause. You know, we often ask readers to write to us. Daniel suggests this. I'm listening to you discussing AI and how it affects news reporting, he writes. And here's what Daniel says. There's an opportunity here for news media to retake some ground by offering verified reporting. Attribution to a known reporter becomes verification. Getting the scoop to go to press first might be obsolete. Do you think that's right? Do you think that attribution to a known reporter actually aids in verification? Do people believe it?
I mean, that's what we're banking on at a small, locally owned chain, is that our readers will come to us because they do know the reporters, they recognize them, they're regular attendees at meetings, they're at events, and they're out in the community, they're on social media a little bit. Because, you know, our readers, and I know that myself, and I'm sure everybody in this room, we see these things come across on Facebook feeds and various stories about celebrities and sports, and it's clearly generated by AI. It's hard to read it. It's becoming more ubiquitous, but I'm hoping that that just drives people more to the local journalists that they know are actually going to be credible and somebody they can trust.
In this station, people really have a relationship with the voices, and now increasingly the faces, to our detriment. But I think that, you know, it's a very personal thing having some earbuds in your ear and someone talking to you. We do use AI in some ways here to kind of cut out some of the grunt work of days past, you know, where an intern might have to transcribe an hour of tape, and now AI can do that for you almost instantaneously. But I still remember Sports Illustrated last year or so, just getting absolutely killed for having AI-generated authors with AI-generated author photos, quote-unquote writing AI articles that did not belong under the Sports Illustrated masthead. So until that technology can call up a Saratoga Springs city councilor and get a scoop that that councilor is now running for the county board of supervisors instead, I don't know that we're there yet.
It's one of the reasons social media, despite my hesitancy about this, is important for a reporter to get out there, to get their face out there, to establish a persona. Reporters, it's just an added thing that they have to do. But going forward, as this crisis deepens, and I think it is deepening, I think local reporting, which is far more trusted than national reporting, can be the savior for us.
Pew Research actually confirms what you're just saying. There's a new survey that confirms what they basically reported since 2016. 74% of Americans say they have at least some trust in the information that comes from local news organizations. Only 59% say the same about national news organizations. Now, that's especially driven by partisanship. That is, Republicans have a much lower trust in all media than Democrats do, but only 40% trust in national news outlets on the part of Republicans. But the fact is that the local outlets have the capacity to actually give people a sense of confidence in what they're reading. And I just wonder if that carries through. We have, in the last couple of decades, especially focused our local news organizations on getting away from the coverage outside our communities. I tried very hard to have an all-local front page at the Times Union in the last few years that I was the editor. And now, you know, I wonder if that was such a good idea. I wonder if maybe we would bring more credibility to stories from across the country by packaging it with the local reporting, since it's the local media that tend to be more trusted.
Our news hole in terms of wire stories about national, international events has shrunk a ton. So we've made that decision that we really have pared back a lot on what we've done. And in fact, in terms of the numbers on our website, if we take a story that's a wire story out of, you know, the Midwest or, you know, Africa or something, we get almost no engagement on that story. But all of our top stories in terms of engagement, people reading it, by far the local ones are the most popular. So that's just one sort of metric, but that tells us that people are at least coming to us online for the local stuff.
Well, and you're right. Of course, I was thinking in the old terms. I was thinking of ink on crushed trees. And when you say it as digital, of course, that's right. You would only get the attention to what is uniquely yours, your local coverage. So there's value. And establishing that value proposition is, of course, what can drive your business forward, to keep you in business, actually enable you to hire reporters. As I was driving into the studio this morning, I was hearing a report from the Pioneer Valley. If it weren't for WAMC, I wouldn't even know that that area just to the east of me was called the Pioneer Valley. I don't know if anybody else covers it, but you're,
you know,
there.
It's a sad story, actually, this week. It was reported that New England Public Media, our colleagues in that area, are laying off 13% of their staff and their news directors going to law school. So it is tough times. And you're right, you know, as far as like a day-to-day Springfield, you know, cops and courts and City Hall and all that stuff, it's less and less.
One of our former colleagues at the Gazette, Judy and I worked with her, left our paper and went over to a newspaper in that area and eventually left because they just almost decimated their workforce. And this is a good 5 years ago. But, you know, that whole area, Massachusetts, has really been hit hard. Western Massachusetts is even worse than Eastern Massachusetts.
It will become much harder for public media, I'm sure. We're surely only a short time away from major attacks on the federal funding for public media. I don't know what percentage of your revenue here comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
It's an amount that would be noticeable.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if for some of the other stations that aren't as successful at local fundraising as WAMC is, it's going to be really hard to maintain any kind of a news product, I'm sure. So that's coming because of a Trump administration's attack on media generally. Let me say that I understand that there is an argument that the president wants to cut spending. He wants to reduce the deficit. You know, you can make the argument that, of course, you could do that by tightening some of the tax breaks that Elon Musk and others get. But I'm not going to have that argument just now. But we are seeing not only a financial assault, which is coming, but also an unprecedented regulatory assault. The Federal Communications Commission now is going forward with investigations targeting news media. The FCC, in fact, is going to be investigating the DEI policies of NBC. I don't really understand what the legal framework for that is, how that's possible, and how that's not just a federal assault on freedom of the press.
Right, and the DEI policy at Comcast, too. I mean, anyone with a DEI policy is supposed to just cave, wipe them from their books.
And PBS has done already.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So we are seeing this mass capitulation to what's happening in the federal government. But at this point, we should give a shout out to the Associated Press, which is sticking with the Gulf of Mexico. And as our friend Mark Mahoney mentioned at one point, there's nothing more powerful than AP style.
AP style. Yeah, but just to remind our listeners, the White House has now excluded Associated Press reporters from the Oval Office because the editors of the Associated Press are saying, no, we are going to continue to call it the Gulf of Mexico because this is an international body of water. It is not controlled by the President of the United States. AP has given in to the president, who changed back Denali to Mount McKinley because that's under the jurisdiction of the United States. So this is actually a principled stand by AP saying, you can't tell us what the content of our news coverage is. And now it looks like this is going to be a lawsuit.
This is censorship. Let's call it for what it is. And this is a huge assault on one of the organizations that's a bedrock of the free press in the United States. I mean, this is not something just simple about a stupid renaming of a body of water. This is important because the Associated Press is calling something what it is. The Trump administration is penalizing them, is censoring them. This is clear-cut censoring, and I cannot believe that more people aren't standing up and shouting from the mountaintops that this is wrong.
I agree with Judy 100%, and I think I've come on this show even as recently as 2 or 3 weeks ago saying I'm going to take a wait-and-see attitude about the Trump administration. I'm not overly concerned, but I am now hugely concerned with the effort. A few weeks ago, we all learned about the Department of Defense removing some top news agencies, their space that they'd had for decades in their press room, which we all know that that's just been a given for all kinds of administrations, that journalists, especially from the agencies that or the news agencies that show up regularly, that they can get a spot, whether it's at the New York State Capitol or whatever. So that, coupled with this latest thing in terms of who's allowed to cover and be in the White House press briefings, that is a step too far. My only hope is that our reaction in the media is to actually double down and just continue to do really deep reporting, find sources, find ways to do it, if not with the official line that happens there, to still dig away. Because we've all worked with journalists and done work that sometimes you need to go around and you need to find a source. We always tell our reporters, you know, don't talk to the top elected official. Go find the town clerk, the city clerk, the city attorney. I know Judy, when she was a reporter in Saratoga, she used to get scoops on us all the time. And a lot of times I didn't know how she did it, but we didn't know where she was, but she was clearly working sources. You don't have to reveal them here, Judy, but they're all dead now. But really, hopefully we can, as the media, double down and find ways to do the work.
You know, the thing that is so important to remember is that every reporter is a stand-in for the public. And that is what is lost here if the AP is not given the same access. The Trump administration wants to be in a fight with the press. It's just like the first time around. It's good for whatever their end goal is, to have enemies to point to put people against each other and so on. That is how Trump has operated for this whole past decade. It's different this time. It's punitive. They kind of know what they're doing. With respect to the public media debate, this is not a conversation about whether it's wise for the federal government to spend a small amount of its money on supporting public media stations. It is about getting even for what the Trump administration thinks is biased coverage, which is laughable given the fact that so many Fox News hosts, a news outlet that holds itself to no standard at all, have been given cabinet appointments. NPR is not a biased news outlet by any stretch.
It is difficult to try to get this across to the audience, however, right? To the readers, listeners, viewers, that the stakes here are about freedom and about information, the lifeblood of democracy. And to try to get that across when people are just thinking about their day-to-day lives, or when they see Donald Trump as a firm, in-charge leader who's going about things with vigor, it is just an intrinsically difficult story to tell that if it is so, as many people are now asserting, we're actually facing a threat to democracy. We are facing a constitutional crisis if the president, in fact, as he is signaling, as J.D. Vance has been saying, if they are willing to defy court orders. If the executive branch says to the Supreme Court, as they seem to be setting up to do, okay, make me. How do you get across to people that that is a significant fact in America? How do you convey the breadth of it? There's criticism of the New York Times. Let me just cite this statistic that John Alsop, who writes for the Columbia Journalism Review, has noted. In 2020, in the first 6 months of Joe Biden's term of office, the New York Times ran 33 full-width headlines across the full width of either the web page or the front page of the print edition. Since the day after Trump was inaugurated, there hasn't been a single one. So I don't know if that's just a change in the design of the New York Times, or if there is a conscious decision on the part of a lot of journalists to not overplay things, to say we're not going to get caught up in feeling as though everything is important because then nothing seems to be. And yet you sometimes think we need to be shouting from the rooftops, folks, pay attention to what's going on.
Yeah, everything is important. I mean, well, we need to prioritize. Whether or not the renaming of the Gulf of Mexico was that important, is we can debate that. You know, I'd like to make tough times calls for tough action. What if we stopped actually covering Trump live or all of these politicians live and start really focusing on consequences of what's happening? I mean, someone had suggested when AP was banned from the Oval Office, all the press should have stepped away, because the one power we have is the fact that we give him attention, and the man loves attention. Take that away. I know it's unworkable, but it's something we should consider, is not airing all of his content live, especially. I just think he loves the attention. I mean, we're having two or three times a day gaggles, and it's just getting him out there all the time. And he often says things that are just fluff, that are not real, but there are real things happening, and we need to focus our attention more on those and less on the Gulf of Mexico.
You know, I feel like that horse is out of the barn. You know,
it's time to go out and corral him.
You know, he clearly incited January 6th, and the social media platforms thought it was so damaging that they banned him. Well, he had his own social media platform, and he had at least one or two sympathetic hosts who helped to rehabilitate him during the four-year interregnum with Biden. I don't know. I think Trump will find his way to find his audience, and they are a rabid audience.
I think that, you know, this is a long game. I'm hoping that that if we in the media
Miles, I don't want it to be too long.
Exactly. So, I think what I'm trying to maintain as an American citizen and also a journalist, to try not to be overwhelmed by the never-ending blast of news, and even realizing there's so much of this that's part of, I think, a strategy to sort of distract us, to set us off. And we've all seen public officials that do that. They want to sort of suck up that oxygen and get the attention. In the meantime, we all rush to cover it and miss some better stories. So hopefully, if we do pare back a little bit and not put a big screaming front page headline every day, that will just be a little bit more moderate. Not to say that it's not alarming, because it really is. But I think that there's a lot of strategy going on there. They're trying to intentionally create a fight with the Associated Press. They can only gain politically by getting in a battle, because we know that base and the Joe Rogan fans, they will rally around that and say the evil, dark state, the liberal media. We even have politicians in our coverage area. We know Elise Stefanik has criticized the radical left media. It's a strategy, I think.
It is intentional, and what it's aimed at is taking out the fact tellers, the truth tellers, really, because what, of course, the president turns to is the media that is supportive. And so he's happy to have Fox News interviewing the president. They're just perfectly content to do that, right? They don't mind. But trying to preserve reality itself is really the work of journalists, the work of the fact-checking organizations that are under the attack of the White House. And when there are major shifts in federal policy that we need to try to explain, we find ourselves sort of flat-footed because we don't have that confidence in the American people. As I was mentioning earlier, the loss of credibility. So, for example, Ukraine. A huge shift is underway. America is, at this point, beginning to side with Putin as opposed to being with Ukraine. Clearly, we are being set up for a situation in which Ukraine is forced to accept a peace treaty that gives up some of its territory to Russia. And Donald Trump's phrasing of this is, Ukraine shouldn't have gotten into this war. It's really a shame that Ukraine got itself invaded by Russia. And yet, how do you explain the consequences of this to people? How do you get across to American people that this is an unfactual presentation by the president, and that the consequences are a loss of security in Western Europe for our allies there? I don't know how to actually do that job.
Especially because readers or listeners typically tune out with international news. We've always found that to be true until it directly affects the United States. You know, blaming Ukraine is like blaming the person whose house got burglarized because they left their door unlocked. International news is always tough, and especially in this moment where you're seeing so much retrenchment, so much nationalism, so much we only want to care about the United States. We don't understand the larger global impact of what the United States historically has meant. I mean, it's history, it's civic engagement, all of those things the American public is falling short on.
I don't have a direct response to Rex's prompt, but I'm old enough to remember when Russia and the Soviet Union were the menace of the world. And that was a unified vision on the part of certainly of all of the United States, every lawmaker in the land, including many people in his party. And so it is baffling to me, our approach to this. So I don't have an answer. I'm flummoxed.
The difficulty is that the institutions that are traditionally checks on a presidential authority are uniquely absent. The Republican-led Congress is not exercising any check. Trump has clearly failed to follow the letter of the law, even the spirit of the law, in many of the things that he's undertaking. Even the most blatant stuff, like suggesting the 14th Amendment doesn't really cover birthright citizenship. You can't negate the Constitution by a presidential order, but the Republicans in the Senate don't care about that, and so they're letting this happen. The courts may find themselves powerless because what's to stop an executive, as Trump is suggesting, as J.D. Vance is suggesting, from simply saying, we won't follow the court rulings. And that leaves the media. That makes our role especially important. And that is why the damage that has been done to our credibility over the years is so pernicious, because we're weakened in our ability to actually influence public opinion.
And I think it's important to note that Trump is almost a post-news figure. If he spouts off in a press conference and says, oh, we're taking the Gaza Strip, or the Panama Canal is now controlled by America, or whatever wild thing that day, it's really hard after 10 years of this to give that the appropriate weight it might have gotten if Joe Biden made one gaffe every 3 weeks. It's just not equivalent.
And again, I think local reporters, local news organizations may be the saving grace here as we cover the consequences of federal actions in our backyards and see what happens. Now, it's harder to do on international stories, certainly, but there are plenty of Ukrainian descendants who live in our neck of the woods who would be willing to talk about this. And also, let's start talking to history professors. Let's start getting that kind of information out on a more regular basis and not just, again, bury our heads in the sand when it comes to our role in the global world.
For our listeners, if you want to have some comments on this, media@wamc.org, we're happy to have your thoughts, and we're grateful. This whole conversation began with a listener, Daniel, sending us his thoughts about AI, and we've kind of drifted off from there. Before we leave today, we have only a few minutes left, we need to talk about momentous events in the history of the media. We are currently viewing the 50th anniversary of that great American institution, Saturday Night Live. No, it's not journalism, folks, but it is a mode of truth-telling. And the 100th anniversary of The New Yorker, which is very much a home for some of the greatest journalism of our time, right?
That's right. And on Saturday Night Live, we just recently learned in some reporting for a new biography of Lorne Michaels, the founding executive producer of the show, who's still there to this day, that there was a lot more backlash than was ever known to having candidate Trump host the show in 2015. And I think as we've been having this high-minded discussion today, we might forget that for the average news consumer, an SNL impression carries just as much weight as a 20,000-word New Yorker report into the deep inner workings of some government agency.
Absolutely so. Satire can really help people understand what's going on. You know, it's not an accident that Volodymyr Zelensky, before he became the president of Ukraine, was a comedian. He was a great satirist and was able to communicate with the audience. You think of the impact that Jon Stewart has, for example, and people say that his reports are closer to truth than fact-based stuff, I guess. And Saturday Night Live has this. It can lance the pomposity of some people and can sort of help us to see truth. It's a wonderful medium.
And it's had such staying power. 50 years is remarkable, as is 100 years for The New Yorker. I remember when candidate Trump, this past cycle, was very critical of Saturday Night Live for allowing Kamala Harris on one of their episodes. I think he did threaten an FCC inquiry. We've got to get used to that. But I agree, especially among a younger audience, comedy can be a powerful medium to make important points. And it holds their attention for a length of time that a dry recitation of the day's news does not.
And I think it's had a comeback in recent years. I think SNL certainly has had its ups and downs. I know my kids are all in their 20s. They actually pay attention to Saturday Night Live now, and I don't think that they did when they were a little younger, and I don't think a lot of young people who I've worked with do, but I think they're more relevant again. And I think it's because if we look at time, certainly the 80s and, you know, during the Cold War, during the Anita Hill hearings, I have looked at Saturday Night Live as sort of a social commentary, sort of a little bit of a perspective and part of the historical record, because they almost always have something to say about whatever is the hot topic of the time.
As we try to hear, folks, and all we have time for in this particular program today, Ian Pickus is here, and Miles Reed, and Judy Patrick, and I'm Rex Smith. We are grateful to our producer, Dave Gustina. But we thank you for joining us this week, and hope you'll come back again next week for The Media Project.
Men are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage now.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Judy Patrick, vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette, WAMC news director Ian Pickus, and editor and vice president of the Daily Gazette, Miles Reed. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
Funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.